Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 14 for November 7th, 2006. Hey, Macarena.
MacBreak Weekly, time to gather once again to talk about the Macintosh, and with us, Macintosh mavens from around the world, starting with the East Coast, Brett Larson from Channel 2.
Hello.
Hey, Brett.
Woohoo. Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going really well.
And all looks well on the West East Coast.
That's right, because it's late at night there. Well, not late, but the polls just closed, I guess, about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. I think they, yeah.
That's 8 o'clock, is that when they close?
I think they close at 8, but they might have stayed open an hour later because of the electronic voting problems.
Were there problems already with the electronic voting?
There weren't in New York, but there were all over the rest of the state. Usually in places where Republicans had an opportunity to win because they're rigging the election.
Now,
I'm sorry, did I say that?
I'm going to get the mail now. Scott Bourne is a Republican, and if he's not, he ought to be. The Thurston Howell III of the show, all the way from beautiful... Somebody's laughing in the background. All the way from beautiful Seattle?
Listen, yes, I'm in Seattle, and my political affiliation is not Republican. I won't say what it is, but it's not Republican. And I did vote a straight Macintosh ticket today.
Okay. True blue. Alex Lindsay, who is in San Francisco and the head and honcho of the Pixel Corps.
Hey, I'm a registered radical.
Yeah, I don't see you as being a member of the major parties somehow.
No, I'm actually a libertarian communist.
Okay, great. Card carrying.
Yep, card carrying.
And Merlin Mann, who is a Whig, which not a lot of people get vote Whig these days. Or are you a Tory? I'm sorry.
Well, I was a Whig. As you know, I was very heavily affiliated with the Whigs, but now I'm just a chaotic neutral ranger with high charisma.
And lots
of... If you're laughing at this, you should be embarrassed.
D&D jokes, ladies and gentlemen. We specialize in them here on MacBreak Weekly. So, top story of the week comes to us from Mr. Scott Bourne. According to Apple Insider, OS X... significant share gains in October. Largest share gains, one of the largest share gains to date. How do they measure that, Scott?
They just take a look at operating system sales and who's doing well and who's not. And their clear decision is that the Intel switch was good for Apple, which is not a real hard thing to figure out. And I'm glad to say that I bought back into my Apple stock after dumping it, thinking that the option scandal was going to hurt him. So I hope this news pushes us up on the market.
That's great. SEC is going to be calling me in the morning.
My name is Leo Laporte, if you have any questions.
The only other operating systems to increase its share was XP. Everybody else was down, including 2098, MENT, and Linux. You kind of expect that of the first few of them.
I was really surprised to see that ME isn't just kicking butt.
But now,
I was kind of surprised to know that anybody actually uses that.
When you talk about this OS X Intel, though, I mean, it's not exactly a massive market share. It's a 1.12% share of the market.
Well, growth.
It's the move up that they're talking about.
0.84% growth. OS X for PowerPC is 3.88% market share. So still... more than three times the number of the Intel.
But given that you're looking at the legacy of a lot of people hanging onto their computers, and so you're talking about a quarter of the Mac users moving over to
Intel just 6 months, that's
a single year.
Yeah, pretty fast. Or nine months.
That's a pretty quick turn.
I'm all Intel. Are you guys all Intel? Anybody still using a PowerPC?
I have a lot of PCs. We've got, you know, eight or nine computers here, so they're not all Intel yet. But in fact, my production computer is still G5, a quad G5, because of Photoshop.
Brett Larson, you said you're still PowerPC?
No, I have a MacBook Pro and a MacBook.
Scott,
and
did you
Mac Mini? That's Intel.
Yeah, frankly, I'm all Intel too. I got rid of all the stuff. Scott, did you get
your PowerPC?
Did you get your MacBook Pro yet, Scott?
No, but it was ordered 12 days ago, and they said shipping in 7 to 10 days. Uh-oh. And since I got the 17-inch model, it takes a little bit longer. But I'm kind of driving by the post office box every day, hoping it'll show up.
You had it sent to a post office box?
I'm just kidding. No, I didn't.
No, I don't have a Mac Pro yet, but I do have a Shuffle. I got the new little. I had to run out and get a new Shuffle. Does that count?
Is that an Intel based Shuffle?
Intel Shuffle.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Exactly. No. It's not. But it's really cool.
That came out on Friday, and you're one of the first. Yeah. You like it?
I have the same complaint that I had about my other Shuffle, which was, it's kind of mixed. The number one is that it's really cool because it is microscopic. When Steve said it was impossibly small, it really is. My biggest fear is that I'm going to lose it. You know, just that it's so small. And, I can keep on forgetting that I have it in my pocket kind of thing. And, the thing that I don't like about it is it doesn't have it's not USB built into it anymore. So the old Shuffle you could kind of use as a memory stick. You know, so I just moved files around. I'd keep them, you know, and I'd move them around. And now I have to have this little cable that I hook up because, it doesn't have that kind of hookup, which kind of bothered me. And then there's the typical, that you don't have it because you don't have an interface for it. You have to kind of skip through songs kind of blindly. So you really have to create the playlist. I don't see any reason for these ever to get bigger than a gig because you have to kind of create the playlist that you know you want to listen to because getting to other songs is a kind of a pain in the neck. So
it's just great. For putting a couple of CDs on and listening to them either shuffled or in order, right? I mean,
well, what I do is it's literally sitting in my locker. I just use it for working out, and so I just, it's great for me to not have something that I feel like is going to fall off or fall somewhere. I just clip it onto my clothes whatever I'm doing while I'm benching or doing whatever I'm doing. And it's just great to be out of the way. I just started using it over the weekend, and it was very freeing.
I think they're just made for smart playlists. That's the way that we've used the Shuffle in the past. I'm a huge fan of smart playlists, and where you might want to do something. I mean, I like the kind of complex ones that are along the lines of show me everything with greater than 3 stars that I haven't listened to in the last 2 weeks or something like that.
Oh, I use it,
and
for
that can
podcasts.
Be a great way to say it's a great fill it just. Yeah, I just say fill it to this amount, of available room.
It's as Steve has always positioned it, kind of a random thing. I mean, it doesn't have a screen. I mean, how can you complain about that? That's what it is.
Right. No. Well, I mean, as I said, I mean, that's the thing that I find that the only reason I like to go back to my little Nano or my, whatever, all the other iPods that I have floating around is because I like the screen. I'm not complaining about it. I'm saying that's just the thing that I always notice myself going, I can't, I want to get to something. If I don't really have the playlist exactly what I want on that Nano at that moment, it's going to be, like I never want to mix podcasts and music because then I end up with these podcasts like mixed into my music. But it's really, as I said, as a workout, like for working out or doing short stuff or things that I'm going to update all the time. It really works. So, it's fun. I like the smart playlist, by the way, but I really wish, and I think a lot of us here, since we've done some of us have done radio, I really wish they would let us do like programming style smart lists where you're able to build like mini lists and then build a list that accesses the list. So basically, so you could have a hot rotation, medium rotation,
you can do that.
Recurrence, where you could have it actually accessing folders.
No, you can. That's one of the best things that happened a few releases ago is building playlists based on other playlists. So, for example, I have a playlist called, we're way down a rat hole here, but.
No, this is the kind of rat hole I like to be down.
Well, I have one playlist. I have one playlist that I'm pretty anal about, which is what I call it the music only playlist. And so I say I have a very complex if statement for that, right? Where it says it's not a podcast and it's not a stream and it's not a this and it's not a that and so on and so forth. And so that creates a kind of pure, non-spoken word, anything that's not music. And then that's what I use to base all of my other playlists on. And I don't think I don't want to go to iTunes because I don't want to screw up the podcast, but I believe in iTunes it's one of the, I think it's something, is a member of playlist, thus and such. So just base your playlist on that.
Oh, that's cool.
It's extremely powerful.
And you can have additional conditions on that. So you could say, is a member of playlist X and I haven't listened to it?
Yeah, absolutely. You could. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's where this gets really powerful, and it's the kind of functionality that I cannot wait to see going to stuff like Mail.app.
iPhone.
Oh, jeez.
Thank you, Leo.
Relatives, I have not called in 3 weeks.
And keep track with the weekly drinking game. You may now take two drinks because we've mentioned the iPhone.
Yes. You know, that is, in fact, the only command in the drinking game.
but Merlin, what I want to be able to do is say, build a – and tell me, this may be possible, and I just don't know how to do it, is so let's say I build six different playlists. So literally I build six individual playlists. And then what I want to do is have another playlist that says, okay, play from song from playlist one – randomly select from playlist one, and then the next song I want you to randomly select from playlist two, and then three, and then go back, and then play another song from playlist one, then play. So I'm basically building a playlist that randomly grabs a song in sequential order from the order that I get.
I don't know if you could do that in terms of having it go A B C D E A B C D E, but you could say is so just do five playlists for A B C D and E, and then say choose from at random from these five playlists. Is that kind of what you're thinking of?
No,
so see, you've got your bench press, your squat thrust, your drinking water.
No, what I'm trying to do is
sound like a bad day in radio class.
Yeah. No, but what I really want to be able to do is
the radio station 101.
But there's songs that I really want to listen to a lot right now, but then there's other songs that I don't want to listen to very often, but I want to have a little bit of those sprinkled in. It is radio. I mean, that's what I used to do. I used to program radio.
I want that radio station and your A rotation.
Exactly. I want to be able to change all those rotations, and then I want to hear a group of songs. I only want to hear them once a day, but there's other songs that I want to hear all the time.
This is the craziest Matt Scientist playlist request I've ever heard. There's one thing that...
It's every radio station does exactly that. So it's not mad scientist. It's just that.
One that you can do a lot.
Repeat work day.
Well, it's yeah. Tuesday, so tune in for a little bit of Skinner.
And now Molly, it's time to get the lead out.
It's Molly Hatchet on a Thirsty Thursday.
You know what's funny is that everybody here except Merlin has been a DJ.
And Merlin does
right. That's funny.
And Merlin's the one who's trying to explain how to do it.
So one quick plug.
That's why it makes this conversation so great.
I don't have this post in front of me right now, but one of the best posts on this that I ever read was this fellow writing about how he created his little custom radio station on his computer. And he did this thing. Now, this is, you have to be like me. You've got to be someone who rates songs, and they can't all be five. But what he does, the mix that he suggests is going in and saying, like, so give me this many songs from things that I have rated 3 stars and haven't listened to in this long, this many from that I rated 4 stars and haven't listened to in this long, and so on. And you can kind of, once it gets you in the habit of rating better, because it really does then lead to this better kind of radio station mix. Is that kind of what you're thinking of?
What if it's kind of like it? I just don't think it's that. I don't think it'd be that hard for Apple to do that. I don't think this is still like some kind of random. It's an implicit way to kind of go towards.
It sounds
that,
like what you want really is like, I want to hear 3 songs by Celine Dion, and then I want to hear 4 songs that are 3 minutes
long. No.
I want to hear 3 songs that have a color in it. I'm not sure what you want.
I really want to be able to say I want to be able to just throw things into my different rotations. I want to be able to throw a bunch of songs in there and have them and know that, like, my Police songs only show up once a day. I mean, I really like the Police, but I don't need to hear them every day anymore, you know? And so, so they're in my gold rotation in there, you know? And then, and then I have, and it's a simple paradigm of being I don't want to write all these rules. All I want to do is grab the folder and drag them into a playlist, you know, one at a time and say, this is the order, you know, I have a pile of playlists that have the songs that I like in the different areas that I like. And I just want to drag them in and say, I want this one, then this one, this one.
I'm going to make an executive decision here. Alex, forget it.
Cheese in this whole thing, you know what I'm saying? There's an awful lot of cheese.
It'd be easy.
Forget it.
Bill, you didn't ask me if I'm still using anything PowerPC. I got left off of that one.
Oh, Merlin, are you using anything PowerPC?
It's actually funny you should ask that, Leo. You know how like you get a new computer and you're all pumped up about it, and then you start going, oh man, this isn't really that much faster. What's the big deal? Well, I'm here to tell you. I went back and I used instant handbrake to remove some video from a fully DVD that I own of some kitty photos. But I ran instant handbrake on my old 17-inch, and oh my God, it took like 4 times as long as it does.
Well, that's a good example of what is going to take a lot longer, absolutely.
But I'm here to tell you, when I first switched, I did not notice that much of a difference.
Yeah,
but
you're not going to with Safari and Word, but you're going to notice a big difference with ripping and transcoding, which is what you're doing.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, apart from that, our family is moving. Actually, you know what, though? My wife still has a 12-inch. That is
many women would be just, perfectly content with that.
Yeah. Well,
my wife has 12.
I spoiled her. I really spoiled her when I got her 12 inch.
Okay, let's just stop right here.
Okay,
I'm giving my wife my 15 inch, actually. She's had a 12 inch for a long time, but I'm giving her the 15 now. Because I'm just trying to find an excuse to buy a MacBook Pro, to be honest with you.
Did you see the Gizmodo post about the supposed not 39% improvement
yes.
in speed? And
I think that's it depends what you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's CPU bound and it's transcoding, you're going to see a big improvement over a power PC anyway. But it's like 10% over a Core Duo.
And I think it's also important it's not just it's CPU intensive, that also is not too RAM intensive or too drive intensive.
Because the IO
all
is
at the
so
same
slow,
time. Yeah, the IO is slower. Mm-hmm. So you need to have it be something that really, like for instance, if we're doing 3D, if we do these really high end calculations, it is really fast. But anything that requires a lot of movement of the data is going to slow everything back down again.
Brett, you wanted to say something?
Oh, no, I'm just not agreeing.
You're nodding. Okay.
I'm saying,
I heard the nodding.
Yeah, nodding on radio works out really well.
I heard the nodding. Brett Larson actually has a jingle. I wish I still had that.
Don't have loaded up right now, of course. No, the thing I noticed, of course, I was coming from, I hate to admit, I replaced my dual processor 1.25 gigahertz G4.
Oh, well, that's going to, that's slow.
MacBook Pro dual core.
Yeah.
Which is, I think it's a gig and a half, something like that. You'd think I would know.
Sorry, I just had to throw that in.
2 gigahertz, 2.16.
Speaking of, welcome to the real world, Macarena, a actual virus for the Macintosh.
Or kind of.
Announced by Symantec. It calls it a low-level virus. They're calling it OS X Macarena. Information Week is saying it's a warning of things to come. People just really want there to be a nasty virus for the Mac, don't they?
And you know who wants there to be a virus more than anybody?
Symantec.
Yes. That's right. In fact, I drove through the cubicle farms down in Hillsboro, Oregon the other day, and I was looking at Symantec's cubicle farms thinking, I wonder if that's the one where the viruses get built.
So fun. Now, let's not say that. I don't think the antivirus, you're a kidder. I don't think the antivirus companies build viruses. They don't have to. There's plenty of guys willing to do that.
I kid the virus companies.
According to Sophos, you're more likely, this is a quote from a Sophos researcher, you're more likely to be struck by lightning than troubled by Macarena.
Wow.
So, well, there you go.
Thanks, Symantec. Yeah. Symantec gave it its lowest warning. It said it's a proof of concept virus. I'm trying to find more details on how it actually works here. Because, let me see. Infects other files when they are executed in the current directory, regardless of file name or extension. It doesn't sound like it really does
what
much
is
at all.
Allegedly,
it doesn't really do much. It just... Yeah, I think it's kind of a non-issue. So they're just excited that they actually found one.
They're so happy. It just really makes me mad now, you know? Can we talk? It's just, it's all these Windows people just dying for there to be a Mac virus.
Right.
And I'm sorry, guys, if you're in pain, it's not our fault.
If we get one, we'll still be like 3.29 kabillion behind them.
You know, one way to look at this, personally, I maybe I'm just superstitious, or maybe it's the fact that, you know, I remember the days back in college when every time you popped your disk into the drive, you ended up getting that one virus everybody got in the late 80s.
The first viruses were Mac OS, whatever it was, 7 virus, System 7 viruses.
Man, back in, this is 6, yeah. But I mean, I guess I've never, can't shake it. So I've never been somebody who you know, personally, I think it's a little bit.
No Schadenfreude for you, Mr. Merlin Mann.
I don't, because there's a part of me that really still believes we're just not a rich enough target. Now, having said that, I think a la the Tylenol scare, I think the way you really learn how this stuff works is in what the response is. And so that's why, to me, that's why I really have, I think the Firefox people have it on the stick, because anything happens and like they are flipping that around as quick as possible.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be sarcastic, like let's be sarcastic about the fact that Microsoft seems to be patching their DRM faster than they're patching their their security vulnerabilities. But I mean, I think it's a little bit, you know, personally, I'm never going to be a person who gets out here and makes fun of people, because you get viruses.
Let's not look for the attention.
Viruses, let's look at what's really important here. There's going to be viruses for the Mac, and as it gets popular, you want to imagine this is going to happen. The real proof in the pudding is going to be how fast they can flip around changes that are going to keep it from mounting, right? Isn't that the
no? And I agree, and I shouldn't say that. It's really reflected by my frustration because I get a lot of email because people know that I'm not saying I'm a fanboy. I currently recommend Macs to a lot of home users, especially saying there's no spyware, there's no viruses. This is a good choice for you. And so the Windows fanboys just hate it and they cannot wait to rub it in my face. And I will get a lot of mail saying, see, there's a virus. See? And instead of them looking and seeing that it is, in fact, not much of a virus.
Well, and I also think that to make OS X a really viable target, it would have to crest over 25 or 30% of the market, which I don't think it actually can. I don't think OS X will ever get that big. No. I don't want it to either. But I think that
it's like people liking your favorite band.
Well, we're talking about it's a great, but our favorite band. I mean, the thing is that it's you're talking about.
Go ahead, get that. I know you want to answer it. Is that it? Is he's answering it?
Yeah, put him on. See if they have a question for us.
You know, how he feels about Mac viruses.
We did Net at Night last Sunday night. Amber and I, the new live show that we're trying out, and we're on Skype, and she says, "Oh, I see Steve Chen, the founder of YouTube, is on Skype. Let's just call him." And we prank called Steve Chen. And you know, I couldn't get him to answer the question, and I wish once I'm in that mode, right, it's the DJ thing comes out. I say, well, when you get a check for $1.65 billion, does it come in your inbox at work? Where exactly? How do you get that check? Is it mailed to you? How do you deposit it? You know, you can't bring it to the bank and say, here's $1.65 billion. I'd like to put half in savings and half in my checking.
It goes in the giant novelty size deposit and
dollars cash back.
What do you do? You know, but he said, "Oh no, it's stock. I don't see any money."
So, Alex, who was that? Was there anything you need to handle now?
There wasn't me.
Actually, that was me. Steve Jobs was calling to ask me some things.
So, Scott, this Macarena. Actually, I know what he was asking. So, how do we implement this folder structure that Alex wants so much?
Oh. You mock me.
I mock you, my friend. I mock you. Other top stories for the Macintosh generation.
The Zune is coming.
The Zune.
I think that's what it's called, right?
I heard of that. I've heard of the Zune.
Do you think, you know, more and more we're seeing, actually we talked about this on Twit on Sunday. Apple leaked a document by accident, a PDF document. It was describing some obscure feature, you know, how to use notes on your iPod, something, you know, who cares? But in it, it specifically said, now, if you're using the touchscreen iPod.
Right.
Whoa.
We all know it's coming.
Did you hear the resolution on it?
No, what'd they say?
Yeah. Well, supposedly it was a typo.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Let me just write this down. Touchscreen. Oh, he meant to say torch what? Screen. He meant to say touche.
I'm not trying to get all Tony touché Snow in here. Screen. I'm just saying. I'll see if I can find the link. But
that was their story.
Touch wheel. He meant to say touch wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a touch.
You don't buy it?
No.
You know what I find interesting is that the, you know, the Zune, you know, as I said, we're all kind of like, oh, well, we'll see. And I was in a meeting with a bunch of media folks today, and I was like, you know, and I referred to Microsoft's soapbox, and they had never heard of it. I mean, they had never heard of, you know, and this is Microsoft's thing that they're kind of putting
out.
It's
their new, it's their YouTube killer.
They're like kind of their YouTube, but I was amazed at how much Apple, you know, Apple's, you know, has a misspelled, a quote unquote.
And they get all this coverage, right.
And they get all this coverage, and, you know, Microsoft is this big company that isn't able to get their word out at all anymore.
Well, I mean, they've got a lot more products than Apple.
That's true.
I mean, Soapbox is just one of about 800 web initiatives going on right now at Microsoft.
Yeah, and it's actually pretty interesting. I mean, that's probably more interesting, I think, than Zune at the moment.
The reviewer I read, and I can't remember if it was Ars Technica or CNET, but liked it. Said it's pretty good. There's nothing on it. Yeah, there's nothing on it.
No. But I like the structure of Soapbox is actually, I think, much better than like YouTube or you know, a lot of this other stuff. So it's it's just that you can. It's much easier. You can be like sorting through other videos while you're watching a video, so you're not like kind of stuck in the YouTube interface.
It's very modal. Yeah.
Yeah, and so this one you can kind of be looking through stuff and sorting it and looking, you know, and thinking about what you want to do next while you're watching the video that you're watching. And there's not much on it right now, but it's, you know, that's the big, you know, the big issue. But it's in beta, so, you know, whatever.
But ultimately, whether it's MySpace or Facebook, YouTube or Soapbox, it isn't about design, ease of use. It's about what's on there and who's on there.
In the end, absolutely.
And there's
the key is just get guys eating Mentos and drinking Diet Coke. That's all I care about.
That was the big story, was that I think these Mentos guys must have shopped their new video around, and they got a deal from Google, so they didn't go to Rever this time, and Google announced, yeah, we'll do revenue sharing. And right. I think that was their way to get the Diet Mentos. The Mentos guy. They're the fresh makers. Fresh. So has anybody played with the new Mac Mail?
I did. I played with it.
What do you think?
It's awesome. It's awesome. I couldn't believe it.
Looks just like Apple Mail.
It's just like Apple Mail. I understand the whole Web 2.0 and Ajax and all that stuff, but it was amazing. I mean, I couldn't believe how much it was like the new mail.
Obviously, you'll really have to have a .Mac account, and if you do, you can go to Mac.com and you can sign in, and you'll see when you go to your mail a whole new interface. It looks just like Apple Mail.
I didn't use the dot Mac mail on the web just because it just drove me. Web mail drives me absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I just won't use it. It just makes me insane. And now I'm actually using it a lot more because of that. You know, it's actually a much better interface. So
I hate to brain on your parade there, Alex, a little bit, but you know, one of the big holes in it for me is that you don't have a way to mark junk mail like you do, in the regular
There's
mail
no
account.
Junk button.
There's no junk button, and since all of us on these podcasts get lots of junk mail, that was problematic for me.
Well, do you know that you can separate your mail? I haven't done this with this yet, but you know, I have I have junk. You can build aliases within the .Mac account. So if you have a .Mac account, you can have, I think, up to 5 aliases. And so I have one that's like Junkola @mac.com. And I just use that for everything that I don't, you know, that I want to be able to get the mail and respond and put it on, you know, and sign
up
for
something.
I'm
with you, Scott, though. I'm kind of surprised that it doesn't have some sort of junk mail filtering. That just seems like kind of unnecessary these days. I mean, Hotmail's got it. Google's got it.
Well, what do you think? So back in the days, in my web design days, we used to have this one guy in the office who we always called Mr. Just a Button, because he would always come in and say, go put up a button.
Just have a button.
People buy things on the site. Just put up a button.
This is the guy who designed Eudora, no doubt.
But what is the junk in your Notional edition here? What is the junk button hooked up to?
Well, it doesn't even need a junk button. It needs at least spam filtering.
Well, yeah. Okay, but that's the question I'm getting at. Are you saying is it just a glorified delete button with a pretty trash can, or what's the functionality behind the junk button?
You know, you're just so cynical, young Merlin.
Am I, Scott? I invented sarcasm.
In dot mail, there's a junk button, and you have a regular, you know, the mail app, you have a junk button, the same functionality so that you can mark things as junk, and then in the future, when mail comes from that address,
right,
the mail client is smart enough to say, don't make Scott look at it.
Okay, so it's just a blacklist.
It's just a blacklist.
But Scott, you're smarter than this. Is it adding it to a blacklist, or is it using it as fodder for a sieve
Scott,
system?
You're smarter than this? Scott, I would be insulted if he said that to me.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, that's probably the closest I'm ever going to get to an actual compliment.
Scott, you're smarter than that. Oh, wait a minute, Ness. Wait a minute, Merlin. Let's talk about what Gmail does. Because Gmail
something? While you guys were talking about that, I just want to say one thing. Is that I actually added a folder in the .Mac mail and called it junk, and it immediately gave me a junk icon. Like, it immediately identified that as junk.
Ooh, Easter egg.
And so,
well, you're right. It does say it's junk.
It immediately gives you that. So I don't know whether I have to get some junk mail now to know whether it's actually working.
So Google Mail, Gmail has two-stage junk filtering. One is it has pretty good spam filters in it, and that's what I'm thinking. Mac Mail is lacking is just built-in spam filters. You could fairly good job of that, and automatically sends things to a junk filter. The other thing Google Mail has is a report spam button. Now, who knows if that's wired to anything? My presumption would be that it's using some sort of collaborative filtering like Brightmail, and then when you report something as spam, if enough people report it as spam, it has now become spam and is added to the filter list.
Let me look at the code. It says everything there goes to Leo at Leo.
Yeah, it might be. It might be what happens. It might well be what happens. But Google has pretty good spam filtering.
They it's
not great.
Yeah, I think I'm just trying to, because I'm thinking, because I've taken a bunch of different approaches over time in trying to deal with this problem on the client level. And so Leo, for example, have you used, we talked about this a little bit, on Fastmail, have you used the sieve functionality?
Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, there's several ways you can do this. There's the kind of overt ways where you go in and say, okay, here is the level of false positives, for example, that I can tolerate. So I can say, in my case, I've clamped down really hard. It's worth it to me to like potentially lose some kitty photos if it keeps a lot of the Viagra out. And I think in the case of Gmail, what it's doing is say I suspect what it's saying is add this to the big THE big pile of spam that we use to improve our algorithm.
Right.
So I wasn't trying to be snide. I'm just saying that, like, for example, in mail.app, it's adding it to the Bayesian equation, right? It's saying include this in the corpus that we use to determine the Bayesian filtering. So my question was, the apparently snarky question I asked was, what does that button do when you hit junk? Is it just blacklisting it, or should that add it to a sieve corpus?
It should add it to a sieve corpus.
That's an excellent response.
I'll take B, Alex. It should add it to a sieve corpus. Can you phrase that in the form of a question, Scott?
Can you tell me what the heck a sieve corpus is?
Yeah.
Thank you. Guys, anybody else use SpamSieve?
Bayesian corpus. He's talking about a Bayesian corpus.
I use an app.
Hey, listen, habeas corpus was just ruled illegal by the Bush administration.
I'm so going to Guantanamo.
All right, let's explain. I'll tell you the best way to handle spam. It's a three-stage filtering technique. Think of spam as sewage. You got to get the lumps out first.
Thank you, Leo.
Okay, that's it. That's the settling tank.
You have to put it in a city park on Riverside Drive.
That's right. Just for fragrance. And then it's important to chlorinate.
What do you do with the lumps once you get them out?
Can we just not go there, please?
Is that a facetious question, or do you really want to know?
I'm just begging you.
They go into the lump corpus.
Yeah.
I'll owe you one if we can just not go there.
What I use, and I think this is, I have actually very effective spam filtering, and I need it because people like Scott give out my email address all the time. And so I've had Leo at leoville.com for 10 years. So I get ready for this, kids, 1 million spam messages a month. And I know that because my service provider tells me of all my email, only 0.01% is actual mail.
That's awful.
It's really bad. So I get 30,000 good messages a month, 999,970 bad messages a month. And the way that I handle it is I have a service provider that does this kind of gross filtering. They just get the stuff that's so egregious, there's no chance of a false positive. There's no chance that it's my mother sending me an ad for a big-breasted Latinas.
And they're doing that. They're relying on a lot of information that's shared between thousands.
Collaborative
of ISPs.
Filtering,
real-time filtering,
Collaborative filtering. That really works. If enough real people, and this is how Brightmail works, and there's a number of other services. Only my email is a good one. I use MailRoute, which is actually commercial. It's not available to end users. I've told you about Island Email, I think, Merlin. That's one of the companies that uses that. But what that does is very effective. I don't know what the algorithm is, but let's say 9 people say this is spam. It's spam. There's no question. It's spam now.
It's saying like anything over a 15 is or whatever.
Now you're talking the spams using SpamSieve or a spam assassin.
Well, it's exactly, or whatever its equivalent version of that is. It's saying like, gosh, it's really
so
really unlikely.
Right.
And
I've played Spam Assassin a little bit, setting the scores high and low to look at what you get. And it's true. Anything over in Spam Assassin, anything over a 9 or a 10, there's no question. It's just...
Is your second level on your mail server?
It's Fastmail. It's Spam Assassin.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
And then I use Spam Assassin it does scoring. And I'll say, okay, well, I'd like to see anything above... I mean, I want to see everything below a 5, I want to see. Actually, should be below a 6. I get occasional false positives in the 5-6 range. Anything above a 6, I really don't want to see. And then I use SpamSieve locally. So I have 3-stage filtering, and
it
works pretty well.
Anybody else here using SpamSieve?
SpamSieve's excellent.
I've been trying. Yeah, Michael Tsai, he does great stuff. I've been training it over time. The nice thing about Spam Sieve is it really exposes the the corpus, meaning all of the email that it's using to make this determination. And so you train, like with the Bayesian stuff in mail.app, you train it. And you say, this is a good message, this is a bad message. And you try and keep that balance at what, Leo, about 60-40? You want about 60% spam?
Well, yeah, as close as you can get to 50-50, I think, is ideal. But if it gets too much in one direction, then you have less.
But this is what I love about Spam Sieve. Is once you've used it for a couple of weeks, you can go in and look at your corpus.
I'm looking at my corpus now. It's really fun.
And it's really cool. So you'll see all this stuff that you never in a million years could have grokked on your own. You'll see these weird, like, there's some words that for whatever reason, they seem like a perfectly normal word.
You can sort by the probability of spam.
That's exactly right. Down to a probability of one.
If I have certain, you know, I have quite a few words that are a certainty that if it has the word Hackensack in it, I'm not kidding. If it has the word Hackensack in it. Now, see, to me, that's spurious. Because what if somebody sent me an email with the word Hackensack?
That's the beauty part. Because then you've also got a whitelist.
Right.
And you've got a whitelist to fight with. And it goes, okay, if it's from thus and such person, or it has this kind of header in it. So anyway, that's what's smart about it.
KitchenAid also is a certainty of one.
KitchenAid?
But now remember, this is my email. And that's the other beauty of this. This is totally tuned to what I get. Not anybody else.
That's right.
And we were wondering why we didn't have very many New Jersey listeners.
All the Hackensack listeners. But this doesn't necessarily... Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, Merlin, that just because that word has a probability of one doesn't mean that that's going to be flagged as...
I mean, I barely understand this. I don't understand how the water gets in my house, so I certainly don't understand how spam filtering works. But what the part of this that I do understand is that the beauty part is that each one of these words is evaluated separately, and then it makes a determination based upon the net effect. So,
right.
I mean, you know, if there is stuff in there that's really good and it's... You know, that's the neat part. It's learning. It's an algorithm. It learns.
And whenever I get mail, for instance, to Leo's hair at some address, it's guaranteed that no, I'm not kidding. You're laughing. I get several thousand messages a month to Leo's hair at leoville.com.
Well, so I would say one thing. If you're running a shared account that has, you know, basically a catch-all, I used to love having a catch-all, which just means anything at thusandsuch.com comes to you. One of the best things you can do is to shut off the catch-all because... Right now, spammers are war dialing, basically dictionary,
right.
You know, attacks to spam you. So that's one of the very first things you can do is come up with some kind of a nonce word that is actually your true email address.
So you're saying don't. I see. So anything, if I say anything that comes to leoville.com at all, I'll take.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I absolutely.
But
do
the
that.
Thing
I reject
is that,
anything that doesn't have a Leo's hair, for instance, is immediately goes to the bit bucket.
That's right. That's right. And just to throw out that URL, Michael Tsai, is that how you pronounce it? Michael Tsai?
Tsai, yeah. Tsai. T-S-A-I.
MJTSAI.com. You can learn more about Spam Sieve.
Spam Sieve is, I think it's the best program for the Mac. I don't know of any better program.
Yeah.
And my corpus is massive. In fact, it warms me frequently that I have a giant corpus.
At least a 17-inch corpus.
It says your corpus is so big.
I was just waiting. I was counting down for that.
Now, do you ever prune your corpus?
Well, I just...
sounds like it'd be painful.
Yeah, well, you know, my family... My family was raised Protestant, so they didn't need to prune my corpus. But
it's a tradition in my family.
Well, for hygienic reasons, I sometimes like to get in there and really just clean it out.
But you know, if you do prune your corpus, it greatly reduces your chance of catching a disease.
Now, the new Spam Sieve just came out, and I see that there is no prune corpus command. There's a reset corpus, but you can no longer prune your corpus.
Now, I mean, like all these things, it's worth saying that this will take a little bit of time. You do need to
train it, yeah.
But that's true of the junk mail as well. Are you guys pretty satisfied with your junk mail on your mail apps?
Yeah, mine's about 90. I'd say mine's about 99% accurate, but I still go through my junk folder, you know, once a day to make sure I'm not missing anything.
Yeah, I still have to do that.
I suspect that so much of that is what Leo described at that very highest level. I think this has become such a business problem. I saw a stat, I forget where, maybe in the week. I saw a stat that now it's 91% of the email out there is spam.
Oh my!
And so this is a business problem. You know, if you're AOL or for that matter, if you're Fastmail, that's you're paying
huge,
for
huge.
Just
well. And what's fascinating is that what I didn't realize until I was talking to Ben, you know, Ben Durbin here, is that there's this whole thing where you get these images. You know, like I didn't realize a lot of the spam I was getting were images. You know, of stock whatever.
That's the big one right now. That's the current scam.
And what they'll do is
you're way over, Alex. Way over modulated. Oh.
And
can you turn it down? I don't know what happened. You know, it went up.
He got excited.
Is that better?
Yeah, he got excited.
Yeah, that's good.
No, I drag something off the desk and then put it back on. And
stop
it,
fiddling.
You're a fiddler, Alex.
I just moved and it fell. I didn't fiddle anything. So anyway, the...
Anyway, go on.
So one of the things that Ben was describing is that they had this... there's images, but a lot of the stuff you'll see is there'll be a bunch of good words and a bunch of coherent stuff. Sometimes, right. You know, stuff from Shakespeare, stuff from right. all these things.
It's very hard to filter. Yeah, I get
the
a
only
ton
reason...
Of
well, no, if you say if you keep on telling your junk mail that that's junk, it actually is.
I have a trick for that.
It confuses the junk mail.
I have a trick for that.
What's the trick for that?
Because I would like to hear the trick for that.
Yes.
Yes. I either got. Out. Yeah, it's brutal. I either got this. I know I got this from Howie, Matt Howie at a whole lot of nothing.org, and which might have previously come from Lifehacker. But the trick is, you want a mail rule that goes thusly: if all of these things are met. Number one, content type contains multi-part / related, and any attachment contains GIF, or you can also create one for JPEG, and the sender is not on my previous recipients list. And that multi-part related thing appears to be a big part of catching it. And I have, so far, I've been
what
doing
what is multi-part dot related? I've never heard, that's a MIME type, but I've never heard of that
yeah,
MIME
that's
type.
That's right, that's a MIME type. And I apparently, it's, I, you know, I don't know.
They use that, apparently.
I followed the recipe, yeah. And this has helped me a lot. And so what I did was, I said, move it into junk mail and make it a crazy super dark red. And then I just go in and review that periodically, and so far, it has not yet been anything... that's been useful.
This is unfortunately kind of a necessity with...
totally a hack, but...
Well, you have to do this because what happens is the spam filters work well until something like this comes along. And then the whole thing collapses. Bayesian, whatever, it just doesn't work anymore. And you might have to have an ad hoc rule or two. That's kind
the
of the
irony
idea
of it.
Behind
yeah.
Spam Assassin is that it's all ad hoc rules or mostly.
That's what Alex pointed out that makes it so brutal is if it's got any kind of sensible text in it at all, you end up screwing up your own filter. That's why you sometimes get an email with, like, you know, three pages from Moby Dick in it.
We should get Michael Tsai on sometime and really ask him, because anybody who's in the thick of this probably can tell you a lot about what spammers are doing right now. Be interesting.
See, I think if they're putting in Moby Dick and pieces from books, I actually think that's something that's really spam, because no one writes emails like that.
Yeah,
no,
but how do you
proper prose? Everything. No,
but how do you filter against proper prose?
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just, you know, it's just that
oh my god, the
all...
punctuation filter is going off the roof. You know, I mean, what do you? Anybody else have an effective spam technique that they'd like to share with the audience?
I have an.
I have one. I'd like
I
to
use the dual email address thing where I have an email address I give to friends. And I have an email address I use publicly, and that has worked very well.
Except after a while, no matter what you do.
It's out of the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Gibson...
It's been like 4 years.
Really?
I've never really had a problem. And I, like Alex was mentioning, I use an alias every now and again, and I just turn the alias off.
Yeah, and I have...
Once you start to get a heavy amount of junk mail, it's like, all right, I got to turn that alias off and move on to the next one.
And I have codes that I tell people put this in the subject line, and if they put that in the subject line, it's sorted. It's the first thing that happens is it gets sorted into a folder, and I only get maybe those are things that are important, and I only get maybe 15 emails a day that go into that folder at maximum, oftentimes no more than two or three, and so people really need to get a hold of me. A lot of times they'll use those.
Yeah, that's what Jerry Pournelle does. He has kind of a random phrase that if you put that in the subject line.
Mine's not even random. It's initials, and you know it's these initials.
Fastmail supports that. You can and it's nice because you can change it anytime you want.
Yeah, I use that in the and that's part of the sieve. Fastmail has a great filtering language, sieve. I wish it were more widely supported.
It's and what's nice is if you do, regardless of whether you do it with Fastmail or whomever, you can go out there and there are these recipes that are
right.
amazing.
It's
and
like you just Procmail. Basically copy. If you had Procmail access, you could do it as well.
It's just it's this really sophisticated if. You know, ifs, ands, ors. It's, I guess, you know, kind of basic Boolean logic of saying if any of these things happen. And what's beautiful is you can actually also make these really sexy auto-respond filters to say if any of, you know, like a subject, any of these subject lines come up, automatically send this response and so on. It's really powerful.
I haven't played with it as much as I'd like to, but I have, for instance, a vacation message that I'll use, but I also have a, if you send me something more than 3 megabytes, you'll get a special message that says, you know, I don't take that, but please use this. It is. It seems like that could be very handy if you really knew what you were doing with that. So, Scott, what do you do about email?
I have an assistant named Lisa who takes care of it.
Yes. Thurston just hires people. You know, I find there's no substitute for human labor, and it's so cheap, don't you find?
Lovey, obtain me some Viagra.
I am interested in all of your Viagra emails, by the way. But beyond that, actually, to tell you the truth, this has been a very helpful conversation for me because it's, you know, an area I don't have time to pay a lot of attention to.
Most people
don't.
I'm too
busy learning other things.
Right, most people
don't. And so I have to admit that I probably have far less skills in this area than our average listener, but given this painfully long but valuable conversation, I'm going to take some new steps.
Sorry, Scott. Let me make it feel better for you. iPhone.
Thank you.
There is no iPhone news. I've been looking desperately for you.
Oh, now. Just hold on a minute.
I actually have some.
There is iPhone news, Alex.
Is the iPhone the Holy Grail of podcasting? I don't know if it's really news. It's just some guy is
some blog that mentioned iPhone.
But it's an excuse to talk about the iPhone, Leo.
I just got a new phone from T-Mobile called the Dash. It's an HTC. I like HTC's phones a lot. It's the Tornado, I think. And I'm liking it a lot. It's Windows Mobile, but it does, you know, Windows Mobile now syncs pretty well using Missing Sync. I've been pretty happy with the results.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
I have the 3125 on singular. It does the same thing. Yeah. Very well.
Yeah. I think they're finally getting it so that you can actually use a Windows Mobile machine with a Mac.
I hope you got a short contract because soon and very soon.
They'll be the iPhone. I know. I showed it to my daughter. She said, okay, I'm waiting for the iPhone.
I just keep on swearing at my Trio, but, you know.
Scott Bourne has a lot in common with a 14-year-old girl named Abby. I just want to point that out.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Now you know why I've changed my picture, Scott. Maybe you should change your picture.
They both have MySpace pages that claim they're 15.
No, thank you, sir.
Let's see. What else? What other stories does anybody have? Anything of great interest? Have we really concluded the spam? I guess we have the spam.
I think we've beaten it into the ground.
We have run that into the ground.
I think people are interested, though. I mean, and
you know, it's the thing about spam.
We
this
to
is
deal with it.
We do, and the, you know, part of the problem with spam is it's one of those things. There's like those old kind of Skinnerian things you can do with attention, where you know, it's sort of the way that like you get people to gamble because it doesn't pay off all the time, right? I mean, if a slot machine paid off all the time, no one would ever use it. It wouldn't be gambling. And I think there's a similar kind of thing in a much more nefarious way happening with spam. It's stealing these little micro slices of our attention on a frequent enough basis. Yeah. It's kind of maddening.
It's painful.
I really,
you're being nibbled to death. It's not like
I think I'm really starting to take that whole approach. I think we should really take a more Islamic approach of, you know, if you're sending out more than, you know, let's say, well, we'll make the number high, a million emails a month, which is more than I send out, you know, significantly. I think someone should just come to your house and cut one of your fingers off. And every time you do it, they just cut another finger off. And after 10 months,
ow,
you're pretty much, you know, not
you're done
doing it anymore.
You're done.
Yeah, you're done. I really think that would be very effective. I think if you did it publicly.
But we can't find these guys. That's the problem.
Well, they know a lot of these guys are. They just can't catch them.
I have some non-spam related news.
All right.
There's been a rumor on one of the rumor sites that the MacBook Core 2 Duo is available, and there's a site taking pre-orders from it, one of the online
retailers. That's an error. That's got to be an error. I don't you think that they should keep the MacBook a Core 2 so that it's very clearly distinguished from the MacBook Pro?
I'm simply telling you the report. There was very little difference.
Although the Intel part probably isn't much more expensive, so why not have everything be Core 2? I'm starting to really regret the anemic video in my MacBook.
Well, and the other news,
this is where you were having the presentation problems. Yeah. It was kind of going too slow for you.
I love the form factor. And, you know, in a way, I would like a MacBook that had a faster processor and because I like the form factor. I like the size.
Mm-hmm. I wish that it had a PCMCIA slot so I could put
That's a big lack.
What would you put in there, Brett? What do you need to do?
Well, I have the Verizon Express card for my MacBook Pro, so whenever I travel, I can pop on and get online.
That's their EVDO high speed.
Yeah.
And that works with a Mac?
Yeah.
Somebody was asking me that, because I think the Singular does not.
Verizon
Singular currently
does.
Doesn't support it. The Verizon one, their Verizon Connection Manager software has always worked with the Mac.
Oh, that's good.
It works great, and it's fast.
Well, that's really
so I'd
good
like that on. I love the black MacBook. I think it's a slick.
I do too. Computer. I'm very happy with it.
Unless you're guaranteed a Wi-Fi, you're not going to get online.
Right. Right. Yeah, a lot of PC laptops are coming built in with the Singular or the Verizon EVDO in it. Singular Edge or the Verizon EVDO in it. Automatically.
Just cool.
You know, all this talk we have about the new Core 2 Duo MacBook Pro and potentially MacBook, we don't want to forget that one of the big changes to the MacBook Pros is 33% more RAM capacity, which is important cool. to some
I
of
mean,
us.
You know, it's...
Go to 3 gigs instead of 2 gigs.
Yes, which is very important to
Seems
me.
An artificial barrier, though. Why 3 gigs? Why not 4 gigs?
Well, I don't
Isn't
know.
Is it an addressability problem?
No, I don't think.
I believe it was actually an Intel infrastructure problem.
Oh, it is, then.
I have it right in front of me. Yeah, it was an infrastructure
issue. It's a motherboard issue.
With what it could address.
Huh. All I know is it's more than 2, which is better.
Haul. Is it better, though?
It is...
It's for me.
It is better. It's better. It would be better for me. I just ordered a. I have it actually sitting here by my computer. Now I have to have enough time to do it. I just bought a new 160 gig drive for my laptop because the 100 gig is just like, you know, I have like 2 gigs open all the time, which is not really good for the drive. And so because you know the boot camp, which I need to use. I know that everyone likes Parallels, but I need to use it for some of the graphics applications that won't run in Parallels or won't run well. So I give up 30 gigs to Windows, and then I have so I'm getting this new thing. But having 160 gigs makes a big difference. Having as much RAM as I can pile into almost any computer I get is pretty much. But of course, that's because I do graphics, you know. And that's I think for the average person running around, I think that there's not a. I don't know if it's really that important, but I know for me, for graphics, the more RAM I can throw at anything, RAM is one of the easiest ways to speed up your computer. At least in graphics, but anything that uses big files, RAM will speed up your computer more cheaply and more quickly than almost anything else out there. That's all I have to say. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
One thing that I forgot to tell Brett that we've started doing on Mac Break Weekly since you were on last is come up with a Mac pick, a software pick that each of us, shall we? I think we've run out of stories, so I think it might be time to do that.
Okay.
Run through our quick software.
Is it my turn?
Yeah, go ahead, Alex.
So there is a new application that was just released for the Mac this week called VTOR by a company called RealViz. And this is not like particularly a cheap application, but it's a really cool application. And they have a demo, and it's worth just downloading just so you can play with a demo. What VTOR does is it lets you actually build a 3D environment. You can build a 3D model out of a single photograph. So... it's really cool. If you go up, it's realviz.com, and you go up there, and I just got it, and so, but we've had it on the PC for a little while, and you literally take a photo, and you have to. It's not really for like doing out like mountains or anything or organic, but if you're in a street or your house or a room, you simply have to identify the corner of the room, something that has a right angle, a couple right angles where the X, Y, and Z would. All meet somewhere, and then you identify a couple lines that are parallel with those, and boom, it figures out where the camera is, it figures out what the, and then you can start building walls and building pretty complicated models out of it. It's, we've got
can
a
use
bunch
it on
of
Google Earth?
You can wow. export it out to Google Earth. You are correct. So it is, it doesn't do the import-export out of Google Earth that SketchUp does, where you can export a location from Google Earth into SketchUp and then back. But you can export directly to Google Earth and then move it into place. That's actually one of the big cool things that it does. And it's a really nifty. I mean, they have other programs that are a lot more complicated and significantly more expensive. But this one is just a really cool eye candy. Even if you never buy it, it's definitely worth checking out.
All right.
That's my pick.
Say the name again.
It is called VTOR.
VTOUR?
Yep. And it's at realviz.com.
VTOR by RealViz. And how much is it?
I don't know what the retail is. You know, everyone just sends me software. So I think it's like $500 or something like that.
Oh, okay, good.
Whatever.
Whatever. It's just money.
I don't know. It's not my money. So, you know, it's
money.
You know, it's just that it's a really, as I said, there's a free demo. It's worth just checking out. If enough people, you know, email them and say, I'd really buy this at $150, maybe they'll make a version that will work at a lower price.
Mr. Scott Bourne, do you have, my friend, a pick?
Well, I do, and it's a tiny bit self-serving, but it's kind of exciting. AperatureTricks.com, as you know, Leo, been going strong since way back to before the last Macworld, almost a year.
Before they fired everybody on the Aperture team.
And before, I heard about that. They got rid of them all, didn't they?
Anyway,
Merlin, you're stoking the fire.
My blog has been absorbed.
What?
It's been absorbed. The Borg. No, I'm just kidding. I'm proud to announce that in partnership with O'Reilly Digital Media and with the help of Apple, Aperture Tricks is now part of Inside Aperture, which is a whole new big blog because big guys, not just me, are doing it. O'Reilly's doing it. And if you go to the Apple.com hot news page, you'll see they're writing about us there.
Is it InsideAperture.com?
It's O'Reilly Digital Media's the place to go get it, and then there's a link to it. You can just get the link right off the hot news, apple.com/hotnews. You'll see the link. And we have put together the best photographers in the world in terms of people who understand aperture, and there's tons of tips and automator workflows, including some that our friend Sal has put together. There's all kinds of cool stuff. It's probably going to be the world's number one resource for aperture. So if you're into that, I'd like to invite you to stop on by.
Well, I will put a link in the show notes to it. It's, as you said, digitalmedia.oreilly.com/aperture, but that sounds great. So no more Aperture Tricks.
Well, Aperture Tricks is actually a small part. There's a little feed on the right that says Other Aperture News, which is actually fed via RSS from Aperture Tricks. But all of my postings now will be there instead of at Aperture Tricks.
Cool. Very cool. Anything for us, Brett? I don't want to spring this on you. I forgot to warn you we do this.
Listen, I am very happy to say I got a beta release of the Sling Player for the Macintosh.
Ooh, yes.
As a longtime lover of the Sling Box, and I just recently got the new one, the Sling Box Pro, I have to say the Sling Player for the Mac, definitely awesome.
It works.
It works perfectly.
Yeah.
Controls. The video quality is excellent. It's been nice, especially since I've had to do a couple of business trips lately, and it's so nice to sit in a lonely hotel room watching The Simpsons.
I like sitting in lonely hotel rooms too. Isn't that funny?
I don't know if I like it, but I spend a lot of time doing it.
A lot of time doing it. Yeah. Well, I'm going to do mine, and then we'll give you a chance, Merlin. I like to end with yours because they're always so wonderful.
Well, I don't know about that.
I'm just trying to make it hard on you here. This is a...
Surely, go ahead.
This is something I found. It's a 1895 shareware called Menu Calendar Clock, iCal Edition. It's from Object Park Software. Normally, I don't like to add too many things to my menu bar, although if you look at my menu bar, there's quite a bit of stuff in there. But this one is really, really useful. ObjectPark.net. You can try before you buy. I've been looking for, it basically replaces the clock in the toolbar. Customizable clock, by the way. You can add, you can actually easily, unlike the Apple clock, you can easily modify what's in there in the clock. But when you click on the clock, next to the clock, there's a little calendar icon with the day of the month, which by itself saves me a lot of time.
What is this called?
It's called Menu Calendar Clock. Menu Calendar Clock.
Wow.
So you get a little icon with the day of the month next to the date. But then if you click on it, you get the month calendar and you get your iCal schedule for today. You can have your to-do items in that as well. And it's just very slick. I just really find it very useful. It's one of those little applications that now I find it hard to live without. And it integrates very nicely into... I've actually mapped it to F15, but you can have it. You can have a special key or you can just click on the icon. And it's like $18 shareware. And now, my friends, the best...
Drum roll, please.
The best is yet to come. I'm just trying to give Merlin a hard time. From Merlin Man, what is your pick, my friend?
Oh, man, that is a lot to live up to. You know what? Screw it. I don't have one.
Nothing.
Thing. Mine is modest, and it's for you edge players out there who don't mind getting a little bit of blood on your hands. But there's an application. I don't even know if you can call it an application. There's an utility that I swear by that is called Applejack. And Applejack is basically you run it and you install it. And what it does is it installs a little bit of a script that you can run in single user mode. And if you've ever had your computer go bye-bye, you know that single user mode is about the greatest thing in the world. You start up and hold down Command S, Apple S, to bring up a screen that lets you do some Unix utilities to fix your dead disk. This is not a really super sexy one, but there's this
application. No, but you know what? I would agree with you. It's a must-have. Everybody
Applejack,
should have
Applejack
it
is just terrific, and here's what it does. So you let's say something's gone horribly wrong. Let's say, you know, there's those weird kind of things that happen where sound can get messed up and even your monitor might not be working quite the right way. This thing starts up in a shell. It's just pure bash comes up, and by typing in Applejack return, you expose some of the basic tools for fixing some of the kind of low-level problems with your hard drive and with your system. So it'll repair your disk. It'll do it basically an FSCK to check that your disk is working okay. And if you kids are out there crashing, you know, more than a couple times a month, there's a pretty good chance you've got just tiny bits of disk damage that might be hurting your performance. So it'll repair your disks. It'll quote-unquote repair permissions. It will clean up all your cache files, which can end up taking up a lot of space, especially if you've gotten low on disk space. You're probably generating some inefficient cache files. It'll check all your preference files, and it'll remove your swap files. So one-stop shopping. And now the reason I mention it, it's not a new app, but
now with Intel support,
it's just gotten its first Intel support. It is a bleeding edge. There's big red letters on the Mac update page warning you to this is not for ordinary everyday users. But if you're like me and you've been dying on the vine waiting for Applejack to get updated, for me, this is a must-have application. Anytime I start to have any problems, I do not open Disk Utility. I simply restart and run Applejack.
Well, the advantage is because it's running in single user mode, it has absolute access to everything. And I think it's just a better way to run those utilities.
Yeah. What's so you've the had, you've had on good that? Luck with it. It's 1.4.3 RC3, and if you go to macupdate.com and search on Applejack, it'll turn up.
It's a SourceForge project. It's open source, GPL'd, so it's absolutely free. And
you've had good luck with it?
Yeah. You know what? It's one of those tools that I think it's kind of a must-have troubleshooting tool, and anybody who uses a Mac should have it. And I haven't used it on the Intel. I mean, I have it installed, but I haven't used it on Intel. I haven't had occasion
to. It was working on mine. It's just that I couldn't do the repair disks, or excuse me, the repair permissions. And, you know, again, who knows how much of this stuff is waving a rubber chicken around, but if the repair disk thing, I swear by. I can't tell you how often I see people getting beach balls, and it turns out it's because they've got a tiny, tiny little bit of usually a catalog problem. It needs to get fixed.
Well, and I think repairing your disk or FS check doesn't, you know, you really need to run it in single user mode. That's the way to do it.
It's the only way it'll run, yeah.
You can't trigger it. You know, it's not easy to trigger. So I think this is a very simple way to do it. Good. I agree with you. I think, Merlin, that's a must. Applejack.
Did I live up to all the...
You did. You lived up to the hype, my friend.
In your face.
We try every week to stump Merlin Mann, but no, he's good.
See you next week.
He's real good. So when I wasn't here last week, did you guys come up with a suitable closeout?
No,
we didn't. Oh, wait, well, Chris Breen came out with an excellent one. Chris Breen had an excellent one, but we had to bleep it.
So it was pretty bad.
Hey, by the way, I have one programming note. For Mac aficionados, this week in media, which is going to go out about the same time as this show, because I'm just about to compress it here. This week in media, it's the longest This Week in Media ever. It's like an hour and 55 minutes. Now the real show is only an hour and 6 minutes. So if you go to 106, if you're Mac, if you don't care about media, then just listen through all. You know, you can just, you know, skip to 103, 106, something in that range. The rest of it, we got into this kind of, I just didn't turn off the tape, and we got into this long discussion about our use of Macs and all kinds of other stuff, but there was a lot of really interesting trivia from Kenji about old Macs, and John Foster gets into how the Final Cut team was formed, really in Adobe, and you know, and going to Macromedia and how it got started, which is really fascinating. He also talks about the making of the Been There, Done That t-shirt, which for those of you who are really into old Mac trivia is an interesting story. Anyway, so if you're really into that, you just want to check out the end of that This Week in Media coming out this week. So definitely check that out.
So TWIM will be out today. Show will be out today. These are all Tuesday releases, and we also have the new Net at Night is coming out tonight. So there are going to be three big podcasts at twit.tv. Plenty for you to listen to, no matter what.
What
your
about the tagline? Are we gonna do? Is that anything we're gonna keep working on? Should we get help from the kids on this? Maybe.
Yeah. Any idea for how we should end the show? You know, we the only show that has a tagline is another Twit is in the can, which is pretty crappy. frankly,
no pun intended.
Yeah. So if you got something for Twit, we could use that. Anything you got?
And actually, don't work blue.
Don't work blue. We can't use it. This is a family-friendly podcast. Kind of like Mark Foley, actually. by the way,
friendly to the older members of the family in our case.
It's just the right age. Anybody who has a suggestion for the show, a story that you think we should be covering, we're starting to do this with all the shows now. Tag it on Delicious, MBW Ideas. One word, MBW Ideas. It'll show up in our list, and we'll give you credit and a big thank you for helping us out.
Make sure you put your whole name in the in your notes if you put it up there.
Yeah, so that way we can
credit,
give you
because otherwise real we credit. Just get you, we get kind of a link.
We get your handle.
We get your
Delicious handle, which is fine too.
Thank you very much, Chunky Lover 69.
You the man. I think we found our closeout now, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Chunky Lover 69. We'll see you next time on Mac Break Weekly.
I'm going to go right now and do a podcast about this show that we just did. I might want to interview some of you guys and find out what kind of equipment you're using. And then what I'm going to do, if I could just finish, and then when I'm done with that, I'm going to interview myself about how that show went and talk about the equipment that I used. And that should be up. I think that'll be up a little bit later tonight. I'm going to start with the third podcast and then do the second one, release that. So, and then eventually what I'll do is a summary show where I actually am able to go in and...
How about a best of?
Yeah, I'll have a best of, and there'll be like some bonus segments where Scott and I will have commentary about the me interviewing myself about my
own. It's a new network. It's called This Week in Merlin.
Well, as I've said, Leo, the show that I want to do for Twit is called 4P4, a podcast for podcasters who do podcasts about podcasting. And I feel like there's a lot of interest out there in podcasts, and there's a lot of interest in podcasting. But there's a dearth of information for podcasters who do podcasts about podcasters who do podcasting.
I think we need more.
Well,